also known as the Male Practitioner, and I'm delighted to say with me is early years, is it teacher?
Yeah, early years teacher,
working in nursery, in a inner city nursery in Manchester, or inner city school in Manchester.
Inner city school in Manchester
is Sarah Brown, who's also on Instagram as the dyslexic teacher.
Dyslexic teacher, EYFS.
I knew there was another bit somewhere, and I was like, to early years? Really? Well, Sarah, thank you very much for being part of our podcast today. So tell me a little bit about how you came to be in early years and what your kind of, you know, what your background is at the moment.
So I did my teaching degree at Sheffield Hallam a couple of years ago, and I really just love working with younger children. I love the fact that they do a lot of learning through play and that they get to experience a lot more. And I remember sort of when I was looking to go to university, I was doing some research into sort of how young children learn. And when it came across that sort of the first 5-6 years of a child's life are the most crucial part of their life, and that's when they learn the most skills. Because if you think you get a baby that can't do anything, and then by the time they're 5, they can walk and talk and, you know, and do all that, is like, it's amazing. And I just felt like that was a part of me, and that was kind of what I wanted to, where I wanted to be working, and where I felt I could do the most, you know, so the best I could, really, and do have the most impact. So I did 3 years at Sheffield Hallam doing primary teaching in early years with the early years focus, and then left uni, didn't have a job because of some various things that cropped up. So did supply for a couple of years. And did supply for a year and got my current job. But whilst I was on supply, I'd worked in a couple of reception classes. And that had only been my experience at university as well. I'd only done 2 reception placements. And I really enjoyed it. I was like, oh, this is so fun. We just get to have a laugh, and, you know, we can actually just be silly, and we don't really have to, you know, have any real structure. You know, we've got a daily timetable, and we go through it, and the children know exactly what's going to happen. But, you know, if we don't quite get around to finishing off teaching everything, you know, we can move on to another day. It really just flowed for me. And then I went on to supply at my current school, like you said, in inner city Manchester. So it's a very quite in a deprived area. And as I said to you before, we've sort of got our cohort sort of 90-95% children with English as an additional language.
That's quite a high percentage, isn't it?
A really, really high percentage. One of the highest percentages in the northwest, I think, really. And don't get me wrong, like, there are loads of other schools in a similar situation to us. You know, and especially sort of down south in London, I know obviously their numbers are really high. It is, and that comes with its own challenges, you know. I am the nursery teacher, and we get 3- and 4-year-olds coming in that have never experienced English, or have only really had some exposure to it when they've gone to the shops with mum or dad. But they just don't know how to communicate in English. So for me, it is very much about trying to embed communication skills with them and make sure that they understand what we're talking about and what we're saying, you know, to then make sure that we can move on to some form of teaching, you know, in inverted commas, because it is very much learning through play and child based and child led, you know, learning. So it is a case of, well, you know, the children, we've got the dinosaurs in the construction area, and the children have built a fort with the dinosaurs. Okay, well, what can we teach them about dinosaurs? You know, what books do we know about dinosaurs that we can read and we can expose them to? And, you know, a lot of modelling language and a lot of modelling texts for them, so that they get that exposure, because they haven't always had that exposure. You know, unfortunately. And it's our job, I think, as practitioners and teachers to support children in that and make sure that they do have like really good exposure and good sort of a broad and balanced curriculum, you know, that those typical words that are said by Ofsted and those people, you know, in some respects, you know, a broad and balanced curriculum is definitely what children need, but they also need a curriculum that's right for them. You know, and they need things that it's new for them. So, you know, some of the ideas that I might come up with might not work in all settings. You know, it, some people might listen and think, oh my gosh, that's a rubbish idea, you know, fair enough. But it's something that worked for me and the staff that I work with. And I know I'm very lucky to have some bilingual staff with me as well. So mm-hmm. it's really helpful to go to them and say, okay, you know, can you translate this parent for me? And when we're reading a story, can you translate it for these children? Or would you take these children and just do some understanding activities for me? You know, play a bit of Kim's game, or, you know, play some matching games, and let's get the teddy bears out and let's see if we can give teddy bears a bath and give teddy bears a drink and a piece of food and see what they understand in their home language, so that we mm-hmm. can then see, you know, that they have got that understanding or they haven't got that understanding. Yeah. And we kind of know where to go.
I suppose it's kind of like a baseline assessment, but in a different and unique way to that child.
Yeah, very much. You know, and it is that is one of the brilliant and amazing things of having teachers around you and TAs that are bilingual, is that mm-hmm. we can do those baseline assessments in that way. But also I do think that, you know, yeah, okay, you could spend your first few weeks of a class of a term, you know, September baselining the children and trying to get them to come and do activities. But I found, especially this year, that actually, because the numbers of children we had coming in with EAL were so high, the activities we were putting out and trying to get the children to do, we had to do a lot of modelling on them, and mm-hmm. we had to do a lot of work with the children. And actually, really, what they needed was basic activities like, let's put the big mega blocks out and let's see who can build the tallest tower, because yeah. for that they don't have to talk, they can just show you what they know by copying mm-hmm. you know. And often children come up with amazing ideas that we wouldn't have thought of. Oh, you yeah. know, and just by starting building that tower, you've then progressed into them building a really tall tower, you know, and a tower that you've then got to hold the top of because they've built it that tall, it's taller than, you know, them and you. You know, and it's a collaborative teamwork activity, but mm-hmm. they don't realise that you're observing them and seeing their language and seeing how they communicate. But we as practitioners, you know, we get to know the children that way, and that I think is one of the best ways, really, is to do that observation and to have activities where the children are just, you know, exploring and having resources that they're familiar with from home. Mm-hmm. You know, because that's probably going to be the best way that they're going to flourish and, you know, come out of their shell quicker. Yeah. And then you can introduce things like Numicon, because, you know, a lot of children won't have seen that before. They come to mm-hmm. school and, you know, I know I've found many times parts of Numicon all over the classroom. You know, it's ridiculous. And you go, who put this here? Who put that there? And they go, it was him. And you're like, okay, let's not even bother. Yeah. Like, let's see, just collect all the Numicon, you know. And it is kind of just trying to grab every opportunity you can to work with those children in a way that's good for them, mm-hmm. that, you know, shows and brings out their best characteristics and their best ways of learning. And then from that point, then you can start to do some formal teaching of some form, or, mm-hmm. you know, getting those children into like group times or carpet times. You know, that are more focused, that, you know, does mean they do have to sit and listen for a little bit longer than sort of the 2 minutes they're probably used to. Because I don't know about you, but I often find that when children first start with us, if you put something on the screen, on the interactive whiteboard, they'll happily sit and watch it. But if mm-hmm. you've got a book out, they don't really want to know.
That's when the wriggles start.
Yeah, and it's like, you know, when I was growing up, I used to love books, you know, and I used to love picture books mm-hmm. and flicking through them. You know, when I first started in the early years and realised that some of the nursery children in particular really struggled with that, I was like, okay, right, we need to backpedal here. So, you know, it is about getting the puppets out and getting the props out and, you know, having a rhyme of the week and things, you know, and getting anything active in there really that gets the children engaged mm-hmm. so that when they are wriggling, they don't really realise they're wriggling. You know, it's like, if we're going to do going on a bear hunt, let's do all the actions for it. You know, let's teach them the actions, because yeah. instead of them wanting to wriggle, they're then actually using their hands and their feet and their bodies to get rid of that energy that they're not really sure of what to do with, if that makes sense.
does. I think it's about trusting them as well, that, you know, we need to, like you say, for the baseline assessment, we kind of need to tick a box, which, you know, is kind of a phrase a lot of us shudder away from. It's like, ah, tick box exercise. No, but although we need to kind of collect that information, there are ways of doing it. And like you say, it's about kind of providing the resources and then standing back and watching them. They will give you the results you need for your data collection, but without actually having to sit there and make them do something. They'll freely go and do it by having the right resources. And it's about knowing the children that you've got coming in and the kind of the mix that you've got as well.
No, definitely. Like you said, and it is about trusting. It's about trusting those children to use that environment, and it's about teaching them how to, and it's about that modelling and that sharing and that turn taking, because some of these children won't have ever experienced that. You know, and so if you do give that time to model the environment, and, you know, we tend to strip our environment back at the beginning of the year, and normally we'd have, you know, what we would call continuous revision, where we'd have different types of blocks out in the construction area, and we would have different math resources or different play-doh resources, but until the children are used to using them, you know, and have had something else modelled on the play-doh table besides happy birthday and let's make some birthday cakes, that's all they're gonna do. You know,
I'm laughing at the familiarity of that one. Yes,
exactly. It is. So it is very much, you know, like you said, it's about trusting the children to show you what they know. And it's not all children will come out of their shell really quickly. You know, many people know that. Yeah. You know, and it is about sort of just taking those steps and getting the children to trust you and to trust what they're doing. Like you said, you know, and it is about trusting them that they can use the environment, and that, you know, giving them that responsibility to do that activity by themselves, or to build something independently in the construction area, or in the you know, on in the reading area, to do that independently and give them that trust, I think is really key.
Definitely. I mean, you were talking a lot there about like English as an additional language, and, you know, kind of how you put in the kind of, you know, the communication, like tapping into the skills that, you know, your TAs, etc., have got with additional languages themselves. But you also kind of touched on maths there. So how would that work for you? How would you introduce maths into that kind of age group when they don't really understand that concept? How would you bring those concepts to them?
So what we do is we'd sort of start off with nursery rhymes, so like Five Little Ducks, Five Little Speckle Frogs, you know, and songs and rhymes that get the children moving. So even with like Wind the Bobbin Up, you know, okay, yeah, we're just singing about Wind the Bobbin Up, we're moving our hands and I'm doing the actions in front of you, as you can see. But we'd, you know, we're talking about pointing up and pointing down and getting that additional language in, and the children don't even realise that, but automatically, you know, you're giving them those skills to be able to say, oh, we've got to look up at the ceiling, we've got to look down at the floor, and our feet are on the floor. And then it's about sort of, you know, in that sort of that first term, I don't really prescriptively teach maths as such. I know that might be controversial for some people, but I do feel until they've got the language, there's no point in saying, right, we're going to sit down and do a 10-minute math carpet session, because you're going to lose them really easily, you know, matter how interactive it is. If they haven't got the language to sort of communicate and to join in with it, they're going to get lost, and it can actually frighten some of them and scare them, because some of these children come in and they're in a brand new environment, and you're pushing them into something that they're not comfortable with. You know, it can have a bit of a negative impact on them, and they do get upset and scared. And, you know, I think one of the ways that we try and combat that is to do just nursery rhymes and songs of the week. And then as we go into sort of the December time, as we go into Christmas, you know, you can get all your Christmas things out. So the children love helping decorate our Christmas tree, and we'll say, all right, can you go and get me one bubble, can you get me two bubbles? So already they're doing things with maths that we wouldn't even, you know, that they wouldn't even think of as maths. They're just doing it because that's what we do. You know, and it's things about going into your home corner and seeing what the children are doing. And, you know, they're always bringing plates of food over, you know, whatever it is. You know, it's, oh, can I have two strawberries? You know, oh, you're giving me one strawberry. Can I have another strawberry? And all about integrating the language of math into what you're doing. Because by that, you're exposing them to math without them realizing that it is just math. if mm-hmm. that makes sense.
Absolutely.
And you're interlinking your maths with your everyday play and your everyday language, mm-hmm. and so it's easier for them to pick up because they're used to picking up everyday phrases. And then when you sort of do move into like the January, then you can start sitting down and saying, "Mike, we're going to do a teddy bear carpet now. We've got all our teddy bears, we've got four teddy bears. Let's see who can give teddy bear two pieces of cake. So let's see who can give teddy bear one apple," you know, and you can do it more prescriptively in a way that mm-hmm. is still fun, but you know the children have got an understanding of the concept of what you're going to be asking them to do in a more formal way. Does that make sense?
It does. I think it's like you were saying there, I think they need that foundation, that grounding, by just ensuring that maths is woven into things that we do every day, because maths is an everyday concept. We use it. And when we talked before we kind of started this, we kind of talked that we're both a bit bad at maths. And yeah, I'm honest to admit that maths is my weakest subject when it comes to anything I do, whether it's in my working life or home life, whatever. Maths is my weakest point. But I think it's that thing that maths is actually there every day in whatever we do. And I think by doing, you know, say, like you're saying about the Christmas tree, you know, can you get me one bauble? Oh, I need two baubles. It's there, but they're not realizing it, but it's still being, you know, it's been banked in their memory for later. And it's like, oh, wait a minute, hang on. That's the same as that thing with the baubles. You know, you're asking me to get two slices of cake for Teddy. You did the same with the baubles. Okay, yeah. And it's that linking later, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And it's embedding that prior learning as well, I think, because, mm-hmm. you know, it's all well and we talk about prior learning a lot. And actually, I think sometimes you can own it away. So I think sometimes you can have, you know, take a group out and do a separate activity and be like, right, we're going to learn this because tomorrow we're going to learn this. So, you know, okay, we're going to read a story because tomorrow we're going to read a story again. But actually, if you're incorporating that story into your provision, so I use a lot of small word provision, and in that I will try and add in mass activities, so like Goldilocks and the Three Bears, the perfect one, because you've got three bears, you've got three chairs, you've got three bowls and three spoons, and they're all different sizes. Mm-hmm. So, you know, for that we'll put that out in the provision, we'll read the story, you know, and through just role playing in that area with the masks and with the small world objects, we'll be able to see whether the children have understood the theme of the story and sort of what happened in that. And then whether they're able to take it into the provision, and that prior learning has already happened because you've already had in your home corner, you know, you've already had like the cups and the plates and things. So they're used to sharing the food, and they're used to, you know, serving it up and saying, oh, well, you're the baby, so you only get a small portion, but you're daddy and you need a bigger portion of food. And, mm-hmm. you know, obviously they wouldn't necessarily use that word. But, you know, they say, oh, you can have more soup, or you can have more juice, or no, you can't have any more. So it is, like you said, it is about embedding that language into it, mm-hmm. Really, and just making sure that the children are surrounded by that language in a way and exposed to it all the time, because I'm scared about exposing the children to like big language and big words. But actually, I remember I did an observation for one of my NQT observations, and I had this bucket of water that the children had to walk through, and I used the word transparent, and I was like, in my head I was thinking, oh no, it's going to be way too big, they're not going to have a clue what it means, they don't know what it is, like they're not even going to be able to say it, why have we used it? And then afterwards the feedback that I got was that was a really good word to use, because it meant, you know, even the children might not have understood what it meant, but you expose them to the language, and it is about that exposure, because then they're able to, you know, it is a link in their head that mm-hmm. you can then bring out further on, and it is a link about, you know, sort of for future learning, you know, and going into sort of reception on year one, that a lot of the skills that we give them in the nursery and in the early years are so relevant for later on in life and in school.
Definitely. I think that's probably one of the the less understood parts of mathematics, you know, in early years. I think we constantly feel that we've got to teach them numbers, one, two, three, et cetera, et cetera. But actually the language is equally, if not slightly more important, because if you don't have that language to express it, how are you going to sit there when somebody asks you to count up to 10?
Yeah, no, definitely. It is about the language. And that kind of comes back to sort of the EAL and things, is that until the children have got a good grasp of English and they can put two or three words together, they're not going to be able to give you the information you want. So, you know, you could spend the first 8 weeks of the term trying to get children to sit and to listen and to repeat after you and stuff. But if they're not saying words, or they're not being taught words in a meaningful context, yeah, in a meaningful context, what, you know, it's not going to have any meaning for them, and it's going to get lost. Whereas if you are to teach them in a meaningful way, you know, and you're reading a story and you're asking, you know, the Gruffalo, for instance, and you're saying, oh, you know, I'm going to say something, you're going to say something using my turn, your turn, and getting them to repeat it in different voices, it's going to embed in their heads more, and they're going to take it in. Really, and it is, like you said, just exposing them back to that language every day. So it is, you know, about having, when the children come in, if they do self-registration and they get to count how many people are in and get to count how many people aren't in, you know, I know my TA does it really well, where she'll count on her fingers the children that aren't in, and then the children will repeat back to her the names of the children that aren't in that day, and then we'll count them all up, and, you know, just things like that. They know, oh, they're not in today, oh, but they are in, oh no, they came late. And, you know, it's all about that language and having that concept. But if you were to just teach them, you know, this is numbers 1 to 5, and hold up a number card, it doesn't really have any meaning. But if you were to say, right, let's go and grab one object from around the room, you know, let's go and grab two objects, let's go and grab three objects and stuff, that does have a lot more meaning for them, and it is really, really good for them.
I suppose it is. It's about meaning as well. It's got to have a realism in their world, not just a realism in our world. We're adults, we understand that numbers have a meaning. But actually, children need to understand the meaning, but in a meaning, like you say, that is relevant in their world. So, you know, you could be asking a child whose, you know, parents are born bred Mancunians, you know, can you go and get me 5 cups? But actually, if you're saying it to a child that's, say, from Moldova or somewhere, you know, could you go and get me 5 cups? And it's like, I don't know what a cup is. You know, what are you asking me to do? No idea. So it's about that language, but a language that's relevant to their life, their world.
Yeah, definitely. And I think going back to how we were talking before we started recording, as I said, I when I first went into early years and thought about how I'm going to teach maths, like, it was all the brand new concepts. And I was like, I know it myself, but I don't know how to teach it. You know, and I had to learn a lot from other people and through observations and looking at staff. And it is, like you said, about sort of thinking, well, actually, yes, it makes sense in your head, but think about it from the child's point of view. And it's coming back to sort of that child-centered approach of, actually, do the children understand what you're saying? No, that's because they're not from England, they're from a different country, they haven't really been taught that a cup is a cup. No, a cup is something else in a different language. So it's about teaching them that vocabulary, about getting in the home corner and say, oh, look, let's put 4 cups on the table. Look, we've got a yellow cup, a red cup, a blue cup, a green cup. Okay, well, now we need to match the plates. So it's all about getting them exposed into the provision to act on and build on those skills that you as a practitioner have and are able to transfer to the children and to build up for the children, to support them. You know, and then once you've got that, you are able to then take it into more of a specific concept. So, you know, you will be able to then say, right, we can now go and collect 3 oranges. Oh, can you go and get me 2 cups? Or baby bear needs a small cup, but you can do it. Does that make sense?
It does, yeah. I mean, it's quite interesting. You know, I'm sitting here as well and I'm listening to what you're saying, but at the same time, my mind's thinking, it's like, well, actually, you know, with the kind of strategies that are around and available for EAL children, actually they're super useful for everything else we do, because, you know, whether it's maths or whether it's, you know, whatever else we're doing, physical play or something, actually having the right grounding and the right wording and the right language that is in, yeah, is understood by the children is kind of key to any kind of later on teaching that we might want to do.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's something that I didn't really click when I first went into my school. I mean, the foundations that we use across early years, you know, picture cards, cue cards, you know, that basic vocab is a massive foundation and can be transferred into almost any other year group. You know, I know one of our speech and language therapists in school, she'd often come down to me and be like, Sarah, I need something for this, I need something for that, I need something for this. And I'm like, okay, right, well, leave it with me. Or, okay, right, well, here you are, take this bag, or take this and this, or do this, or that. You know, and it's what people do forget about early years is that actually it just underpin everything, you know, and until children have had a really strong foundation of being exposed to language and to vocab, and they've had, you know, things like picture cards and PECs and, you know, all those ranges of different strategies that you can use with young children, it can be transposed into any other year group. You know, it can massively, and I think often people are scared because they think, oh no, early years is just the baby, it's just the young children, you know, it's only for those that can do it and all that. And it's like, yeah, but actually, if you come down for half a day and see what we can do, you know, the progress and the opportunities and the, you know, when are exposed to, that can easily be replicated, you know. Okay, we've got the Play-Doh out, but go and do a baking lesson in year five and give them all recipes, you know, give them a recipe card. But for your children that are new to English, you know, break it down a bit more and put some extra pictures on there, you know, make step-by-step instructions. You know, I love Play-Doh, and this year particularly we started making Play-Doh with the children just because I thought, why not? And obviously when we do the boiling water part, we make sure the children are far away, and you know, we risk assess that one, but they absolutely love taking turns stirring and pouring in the cups, and we measure out the cups of flour and the cups of salt, and we say, oh, we need one cup of salt, we need two cups of flour, or we need half a cup of water, you know. And those skills that they've got there that you're just embedding by making Play-Doh or making biscuits or something can easily be transferred into year one when they're, you know, making they're making biscuits as well in there, or when they're making Play-Doh. You know, our year, we had a Christmas fair, and our year two teacher reindeers, and so they had brown Play-Doh, and then had like a little red pom-pom for a nose and some antlers, you know. And for her process of making that, she could easily have, you know, just adapted a recipe and got the children to do it and broke it down. And like you said, it is just about those sort of the characteristics and the strategies we use in early years can be, you know, moved into every other year group. It's just about thinking, you know, and putting that time in to work with your team and figure out how best to do it, you know, and how age appropriate to do it as well. Because, you know, I think like we said, I think people do get quite scared of, you know, coming down to early years, because it is very much seen as babies and young children and they're not really learning. But given the time and the thought that goes into it, you know, it's completely the opposite. You know, and I like to think the children that I teach, you know, do become quite mature, and they do enjoy themselves, and, you know, they are very independent. And I know there's, you know, I've had children in year two that have been not so independent, you know, not recently, but a while ago. And it's just like the difference between them, you know, is massive. And it's like, well, actually, what else could we do to support that year two child to make him more independent and to make sure that he feels confident to get on with his learning on his own and to take those steps to, you know, become more of an active learner, if you like.
I think so. I think the kind of the overall key message really is kind of keeping it real for them in their world, so that it's something that they can hold on to, that they understand, because it's something they experience.
Yeah, massively. I think it is. And I always sort of try to embed math in everything. So I know I said to you before, we did sort of have a dedicated math area, you know, and all our areas were labelled. maths, the writing, construction, reading, all that. And we just felt that the children weren't using it appropriately. You know, like I said, the number con ended up all over the classroom. Yeah. And, you know, suddenly went for a walk, you know, and we took a good look at sort of what we were doing and how we were, what provision we were offering. And we sort of decided that actually, you know, we don't want it to be a segregated in the writing area and a number area and, you know, all those areas. We wanted to combine it. So we will now incorporate math into the Play-Doh, into the construction, into the writing. You know, we will make sure that the reading area has got some number books in there, and it'll have things like, you know, what's time, Mr. Wolf, and different things like that. You know, we'll try and embed math into the outside area and bring the outside in and vice versa, so that the children have the opportunity to apply math in the real life concept of it, you know. So the shot you've probably done and the children absolutely love themselves is that, you know, that opportunity of exchanging money and you know, picking certain things and putting it in the basket and then going to the shopping till, you know, and making shopping lists and things. It is all about, like you said, making it real life and real life for the children, because you know, they're not going to sit around the table and put, you know, sort of 20 objects in a tens frame and try and divide it up and things, you know. And that's something you work on in reception, but for nursery, really, you know, it is more about making sure that, you know, it's applicable to them and it relates to them and it's real life, you know, and it is too, in a way, but also giving them opportunities to extend it.
Well, Sarah, it's been absolutely fascinating to talk to you, and it's given me a lot to think about. It's like, I think I need to go and evaluate what strategies I use for EAL so that I can actually use them with maths as well. So Sarah, thank you so much.
Thank you. It's been really nice to chat, and thank you for having me.
You're welcome.